Hello, Montgomery County, and welcome to the OPL podcast with MCIU. My name is Brandon Langer, and I'm the Program Administrator for Instructional Technology within the Office of Professional Learning. And this is the third part of a six-part series we are doing with Cassie Bruch, one of our fantastic project consultants in the office, around SDIs in a virtual environment. So welcome back, Cassie.
Hi, Brandon. Thanks for having me.
And for anyone joining us for the first time, why don't you give a little bit of background as to your role here and the work you do.
Hi, so I'm Cassie Bruch, so I am one of the project consultants here at OPL, and my background comes from I was a regular education classroom teacher. I was considered one of our like special ed friendly rooms at that time, where I had about a third of my kids were identified students. Then I really loved working with the special ed kids, so I ended up becoming a emotional support teacher, and then from there I went on to be an instructional coach because I always wanted teachers to feel like they had somebody advocating for them, somebody in their corner, ready to help them, ready to ask some of those questions that you might not want to ask your supervisor, especially as we talk about topics like this, where we're not sure on something that we probably should know, you know, just being in their corner for teachers.
Well, and through our conversations, I've brought this up many times as we're prepping for, you know, the posts we're putting on our learning network, and then these conversations, I'm learning so much just in speaking with you. But I think today's topic around social and behavioral SDIs is one of those where, you know, we often focus on what I would call, in my layman brain, more academic, you know, SDIs and specific processes, whereas social behavioral, there's such a spectrum of things we could be working with students with on in this environment. But can just to kind of get started, can you kind of distinguish what would be the difference between a social SDI and a behavioral SDI?
So I think one of the easiest things to distinguish the two is social. You're looking at an interaction with somebody else, and behavior is a lot more internal. And so the social, we're looking at supports and services to help students in their interactions, whether it's with peers or with adults, as well as that emotional regulation skills. And so that can be things like social skills instruction. And then when we're talking about behavior, it's a lot more of those interfering behaviors that we see in classrooms, and a lot more internalized with the student. It's them individually, what they're doing. So things like using positive reinforcement or daily check-ins and things like that when we're looking at behavior SDIs. But what's really nice for the average teacher is they're not distinguished in an IEP, right? Mm-hmm. The SDIs are all listed together. So we're talking about these things, but it's not necessarily something that you need to write down and take a note right of. It's just something to kind of internalize and think about as we're using these terms.
Yeah, but I appreciated you breaking it down for me just kind of so I could understand how we relate in two different camps there. You know, more the group, more individual is how my brain very simply put mm-hmm. it. But one of the reasons why I like that is we've been saying this throughout this whole series so far. Virtual environments, they're just different. They have mm-hmm. some in, and that's why we're doing this series. Sometimes we end up with SDIs and IEPs that don't really apply really to the virtual environment that we're working in. So what are some of those best practices when we go to approach social and behavioral SDIs?
Yeah, I think one of the things to remember, and even as adults, we kind of get like zoomed out, right? How much time we're on the screens has increased dramatically. And even looking at traditional classrooms now, my daughter's on her Chromebook a lot more than she ever was before. And so remembering that, like, we need a break in some of those things. Mm-hmm. And so even though we might be in a virtual environment, we still can put in things like brain breaks or mindfulness exercises. But a lot of kids, they just need some positive reinforcement. And we can do that, you know, we can unmute ourselves and call out a student and give them the positive reinforcement. We can use, like, the emoji reactions. We can leave comments on their work and things like that. And so even though it's written as like behavior modeling, say in the IEP and their SDIs, well, we can do that virtually. So we can do things like kids love to record themselves. They love to watch themselves and hear themselves. We can model appropriate behavior and then post it in our LMS or share it as a video and then save it. And then one, we have that for years to come. Mm-hmm. Two, the kids are so engaged with it and you make them part of that process. So they're working on that behavior that we want to see, whether it's a social skill, whether it's a regular classroom procedure, we're bringing them in as part of it. And then we have that to continuously reuse and call back for. And who doesn't love to see a second grader being able to teach their peers something? And then you can put up that video.
Yep, absolutely. And I think also, we didn't prep this, but just the idea of modeling, and as you were talking, I'm thinking about how important it is even for classroom, you know, brick and mortar teachers to model execution in virtual environments. Something we've said a couple times already on this in this series is how virtual environments are permeating our brick and mortar settings as well, not just full-time virtual learners. So what about ways to do that? What are some resources, or where can they learn more? How can they bring this into their learning environment?
I think a lot of it is thinking about what would you look like if you were traditionally walking into school in the beginning of the school year, or we're just coming back from the holiday break. We need to remind ourselves what those expectations are. Mm-hmm. Then you can record yourself talking through it. You can record kids doing it. You can look on YouTube. Let's be honest. If you look, make sure you watch the whole video. But there's so much out there, and so many teachers have generated so much content in the last 2 years. It's out there. And then other things that I learned a lot just from watching my daughter when she was on virtual school, we need to remember that kids need a break, and they need to regroup themselves, and they need to get their wiggles out. And so I'm sure as a parent, you probably heard the song Animal Action, right? And the kids then get to go walk around, whether it's in their home environment or in their school on the carpet, and do actions of animals. Mm-hmm. And that just resets kids. It gets the wiggles out. Or students who just need some attention recall and need to move around a little bit. A lot of our ADHD students, we need to give them time to do that and in a space to do it. And videos like Jack Hartman out there, it's linked in our post, things like Cosmic Kid Yoga. She's got these like 10, 15-minute yoga sessions, probably some even shorter, that do things like Minecraft or Frozen or things that relate to what our kids are interested in to just kind of help reset. Then they're also learning breathing techniques. Mm-hmm. So that emotional regulation comes into play for our students with behaviors. My child taught me like finger breathing or starfish breathing and things like that. All that's out there. Go Noodle just came out with mindfulness exercises along with their fun brain breaks. And if you're a teacher or if you're a parent of an elementary school student, you've probably heard some of these songs in the background, whether they were at home or they're coming home singing it. And we can keep using those in both types of environments now.
Yep. And you just, you know, went through a list there. There's so many more resources out there to use. I think the important thing is the intention behind it and knowing what you're hoping to accomplish. I found myself when I was moving into any virtual environments too, reverting to some of that feeling you get as a new teacher, a first year teacher, second year teacher, where I got to fill all the time with all my knowledge. I have to, mm-hmm. they have to constantly be engaging with all this, you know. It's like, well, no, we eventually learn to let lessons breathe, to let learning breathe and lay a foundation where people can be themselves and learn in an environment that's comfortable for them. That's why a lot of students may choose virtual learning if they're in that kind of full-time setting.
And even thinking about us as adult learners, right? If you're a teacher sitting in professional development and you're in the library all day, you might just get up to go to the bathroom just to take a walk or go, you know, grab water down the hall, and then you're chatting with your friend, maybe discussing what you just learned. But think about us as adult learners. We need those breaks in there too, and we need to remember that. Sometimes we don't have to fill all the space, and there's just so much out there. There's so much out there. But we did link some places to start.
Yep. No, I appreciate it. Thank you for breaking down. Again, if this is the first time you're hearing this series, go check out the other posts because we've done two so far that we've put out, and there'll be three more forthcoming. Speaking of which, our next one that we're going to look at is actually instructional SDIs in the virtual environment. And again, Cassie will provide some support, some resources in that respect. But once again, Cassie, thanks for sharing your knowledge with us, and Happy New Year. And once again, this is the OPL podcast. If you have any questions, please reach out to Cassie or myself, and we'll see you soon.